Welcome to Cinephile, the podcast that may not know much about the art of making movies, but does know what it's crazy about. Episode 1, a Dieu créa le podcast. Time to jump into the void.
Et s'il n'y avait rien après la mort? Et s'il n'y avait rien après la mort? Ne serions-nous pas obligés ici de construire le paradis? Écrire une harmonie? Et s'il n'y avait rien après la mort? Et s'il n'y avait rien après la mort? Ne serions-nous pas obligés ici de faire le bien tout autour? Recevoir en retour cet amour infini. Donne-moi ta main et réchauffe mon cœur d'un baiser d'amour. Efface ma peur. Efface ma peur du vide autour de nous. Nous le remplirons de rire et de plaisir. Je suis comblé avec toi.
That was Le Vide by Philippe Axel. I found that piece, I think, via Marvin Suicide, who I found via the guys at Chub Creek, who I found via Brenda Dane's podcast, Cast On. The podcast world is a little bit, I think, like that movie, 6 Degrees of Separation, where you can move in any direction and find another podcaster. Maybe that's the Kevin Bacon game. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, let's see if we can fill up this empty space. Probably what I'll fill it with is, at least at the beginning, a lot of empty noise from my basement where I'm recording, and the sound of my notes shuffling, because I do need to have some notes. Let's try to think of that as a kind of Glenn Gould moment, you know, where you get to listen to Gould play and you get to listen to him hum along. My notes are kind of like my humming along. So welcome to my first podcast. And I thought today that I'd talk about some firsts in my journey to becoming a cinephile, someone who's crazy about the movies. Let me start, though, by saying what I think this podcast won't be, or what I hope it won't be. It won't be a review podcast. There won't be any thumbs up, or thumbs down, or thumbs sideways. Well, maybe there... Anyway, I'm not a reviewer. I'm not a critique. I'm not an expert. I haven't studied film. I'm forgetful. I do research, but then I forget what, you know, and even when I have notes that I can shuffle, I forget what I put in the notes because I get rambling. You've probably noticed that already. Anyway, so that's what I don't want this to be. What I do want it to be is, what I do hope to convey is my love of the movies, what the magic that the movies are for me. I think movies are the modern world's great storytelling form. You know, we used to sit around campfires and tell stories, and that's wonderful too. But movies can tell stories in ways that are different through the actors, through the costumes, through the sets, through the lighting, and through the story itself. There's some magic of just turning off the lights and watching the screen light up and having the story unfold in front of you. Anyway, have this story, I mean, it's so intimate. You can be in a theater full of people and still feel like that story is just for you. So maybe you're interested in hearing about some of those great stories or the people, or maybe you're crazy enough to listen to some woman ramble on. And if that's the case, I hope you'll stick with me. I'm hoping to do a series of maybe five so I can get my feet wet, learn how all of this works, try to improve and not say so much and not ramble quite so much, although I think that's sort of a character flaw with me. And what I'd like to do is have some regular features, if I can get through the first podcast. If you're interested in knowing what I might like to see where you are, you can send me a link to your local Cineplex or Rep Theater, and I'd tell you what I'd go see, and maybe I'll just do that anyway. But what I'd like to do is have every show, every episode have a theme. So today is Cineful Firsts, where I'm going to talk about a couple of firsts. I have some ideas for a World Cup football, soccer for some of you, episode, a Tour de France episode, things like that. Can you remember the first movie you ever saw? I suspect that the movie I think I'm remembering as my first movie is really not my first movie. My family used to rent a cottage up north of here for a couple of weeks in the summer, and one of the things we did was go to the drive-in. And I can remember being a kid in the back seat in my pajamas with my blanket. I don't remember at that age doing anything except sleeping. I think the films I remember seeing at the drive-in, John Wayne Westerns, things like that, I think were things when I was, films I saw when I was older, when I was old enough to stay up and watch them. So I think the drive-in experience, while an interesting first movie experience, is probably not my real first experience of actually going to the theater for the first time to watch a film. The first film I can remember going to see was Bambi. I know, Bambi. But what can I say? I thought I was about three and a half, and my husband suggested that maybe at three and a half, I might not have been able to remember too much about the experience. But I was convinced that I had to be that age until I went and looked up the theatrical release for Bambi, and one of them was in March of 1966. So I would have been almost five and a half when my mother took me to see this film. The interesting thing is my mother would have been about 5 months pregnant with my sister, and I don't remember any of that. So my husband probably has a point here. Although I don't remember actually very much about the movie. I remember Bambi. I remember Thumper. I remember the skunk, Flower. I remember Garsh. And I remember the song, you know, drip, drip, drop, little April flowers. That's as much as I remember. And when Disney decided to release the DVD a few years back, I thought about getting it, because obviously this is, you know, a first in my cinephile life. But I didn't want to. I wanted to keep that first movie experience as it was. I didn't want to get involved with seeing the film again. And to be honest, I did go and do a little reading leading up to this podcast, and there was a lot of stuff I don't remember about that movie. I mean, I know that Bambi's mother dies. I mean, that's the whole point of the movie. But either it had absolutely no effect on me as a 5-year-old, or I was absolutely so traumatized that I didn't remember it. But I didn't, you know. It was one of those things that came afterwards. But here's what I do remember about that first experience. I remember taking the streetcar with my mother. Now, this would have been probably a bit of an epic, you know, journey, because by that point, my parents had bought a house way out in the middle of the nowhere in the suburbs, and there was nothing around us. And I can't imagine how we got downtown to take the streetcar, but that probably would have been one of my first experiences on the streetcar, too. And I remember that. I remember riding the streetcar. I remember getting to the theater. I remember going to our seats and being amazed at all the kids in this theater. I mean, I was an only child at this point, and there weren't a lot of kids in my neighborhood. It was just amazing. There were, like, kids, and they were noisy and excited and waiting to see the film. And then we sat in our seats and the lights went down. And that, I think, is the moment that sucked me in. Where you got, I mean, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with Disney these days, and it's, you know, I don't have kids, so it's probably easy for me to deal with that. But it can't be denied that some of those early Disney films were brilliantly illustrated, brilliantly drawn bits of animation. I mean, to this day, that's the movies for me. That's getting into my seat, sitting down, waiting for the lights to go down, and waiting for the screen to light up. I can't imagine anything better.
Daydream takes me to a place and time when I was younger and you were mine. To a memory of love that used to be, love that was you and me. Daydream took my heart around the bend. Surely this romance had to end. Once I was kissing, now I'm just missing. Missing you. You were the one who gave me a song, held me in your arms all night long. Dreams of you come easy, but look what they do. Leave me feeling cold, alone and blue. For another night, sweet darkness. For of you come easy, but look what they do. Leave me feeling cold, alone and blue. Daydream leads me for another night, when sweet darkness falls upon my mind. Once I was kissing, now I'm just missing. Now I'm just missing you.
That was Daydream by Robin Stein. And I think, like daydreams, the best movies can take us to a place, take us to a time, can make us feel what the characters in the movie are feeling. I'm going to talk about the first French film that made a really big impact on me, and I'm probably not alone in this. It's Jean de Florette. It's a film that's on a lot of, you know, great all-time film lists, probably because it is a great all-time film. I've seen a lot of French films. I lived in France for a while. And there are a lot of films that I love, but this one sticks with me for a number of reasons. I think one of the things it does is it really does conjure up a sense of place. If you've never been to the south of France, if you've never experienced a summer in the south of France, you can experience it in this film. You can feel the heat, the air almost crackling. You can almost feel the dust, particularly in the scene with the dust storm. It's palpable. You're there. You can almost hear the seagull, the crickets, you know, chirping in this film. If for nothing else, and it's beautiful, this film. It's absolutely gorgeous to look at. For nothing else, that makes it a great film. But then you have a great story, and you've got some great characters and some great actors. The main three actors, main three stars, Gérard Depardieu as the main character Jean de Florette, Daniel Auteuil as Hugolin, and Yves Montand as César Subarin, who I think is Hugolin's uncle. I think they say that in the film. It's really embarrassing if I'm wrong because of the number of times I've actually seen this movie. The story is complicated and simple at the same time. Simple because it's the story of an outsider who tries to break into a very closed community. And that's something, if you've ever experienced that, you'll know how painful an experience that can be and how difficult an experience that can be. Jean and his family inherit this property. Jean is a city man, educated, and he and his family decide that they're going to return to the land. They go back to the countryside, to the piece of property he inherits from his mother via another relative who ends up dead in rather disturbing circumstances. You have to see the film to understand. And he comes armed with manuals on how to farm, on how to raise crops, on how to raise rabbits, and he starts to make a go of it, and he works hard. This is a hard-working guy. He's committed, and his whole family work hard. The one problem he has encountered on, though, is the lack of water, which is made worse by the fact that Hugolin and César have stopped up the spring that's not too far from the property or not too far from the house. They want this piece of property. These two are schemers who will pretty much stop at nothing to get this piece of property because they need the water. Hugolin has this plan to raise carnations, to grow carnations, and carnations need a lot of water, and this is the south of France, and it's hot, and it's dry, and water is a precious resource at any time, and this particular summer is really hot and really dry, and there's no water. So Jean and his family don't know that there's water, but there's no one will tell them. The locals know that there's a rumor that there was a spring, but, you know, it's none of their business to get involved. So Jean and his family end up, you know, with their donkey and pails of water, pails that they go, you know, and find another spring further away, and they drag all this stuff back, and then they start, you know, they need rain. And at first they're lucky, they get some rain, and the cistern fills up, and they're okay for a while, but their time runs out, they're limited. And all the way along, you know, Ugolin is there, urged on by his uncle César, trying to find out what Jean is up to, trying to push him to make mistakes, never telling him about the water, occasionally feeling guilty. This is one of the, I think, Auteuil won a César, sort of the French equivalent of an Oscar for this performance. Ugolin does feel guilty from time to time. He says things like, this is getting really hard because, you know, at first I just went over there to find out what he was up to, and he's become a friend. He actually likes him. So he's torn as a character. He has to deal with this, but ultimately he listens to César, and he's pushed on by César, and ultimately never, you know, reveals anything, never does anything that really, I mean, he helps a little bit. He helps enough to keep himself ingratiated with the family. But that's it. And Jean becomes more and more desperate as, you know, his rabbits die and his crops die and he can't find water. And I'm not a huge Depardieu fan, I have to admit that. But this is one of those films where Jean is, you see that he's losing a grip on reality, but it's really, really subtle. It's absolutely beautifully done. The other thing there is in this movie is Manon, who's Jean's daughter. And she becomes important because there's a sequel, Manon des Sources, Manon of the Springs. She's more important in that later film, but she's also more important than you might first think in this first film, Jean de Florette, because Manon is, I mean, she's just a little girl, but she's always there. She's by her father's side, she's helping him out, but she's always watching. And she has Ugolin pegged. There's a scene where she says to her father, oh, he's just a toad. And her father thinks she's referring to Ugolin's looks because they've, you know, with makeup and stuff, they've managed to make Ugolin look less than, or Auteuil look less than attractive as Ugolin. But I have it in the, you know, in my mind that no. Manon has his number. She knows that something's not right with what he's up to, that you know, things just don't add up. And she becomes especially important at the end of the film because she becomes the only character who really knows what happened, which of course means that that's why she's so important for the sequel named after her. But this is one of those films where you just, I clench. I get really choked up because I want people to help Jean. I want him to succeed. I want, you know, Ugolin and César to be found out because they're, you know, César in particular, these two are really, you know, nasty goods. But it's like real life. And they don't get caught, at least in the first part. And you're there. And when the movie ends, you want to weep. And it's really, really, really beautiful. And that's the kind of movie that grabs you and hooks you and doesn't let you go. And you react like that every time you watch it. At least I react like that every time I watch it. I mean, maybe I'm the only crazy person out here who, you know, watches movies 10 or 15 or 20 times. Oh God, I hope I'm not alone. There'll be comments somewhere on the on the show page. You can please let me know I'm not alone. Anyway, those are my firsts for today. And I was going to talk a little bit about what's showing where I am, but I think I'm going to leave it at that for today because it's taken me hours to record this. You know, these podcasters, they make it look really, really easy. But I got to tell you guys, I have such newfound admiration for you. This is like the hardest thing I have ever, ever done. It's been like climbing a hill backwards, carrying rocks. And if I only could, I'd make a deal with God and get him to make podcasting easy. That's episode 1 of Cinephile. I'll see you next time with some foot movies. Here's Dataset to take us out. Ciao for now.